Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius, live, fit, go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands for the super athletic stuff, like running gear for cruising up the trail. Woo! And the super athlete-ish stuff, like fishing gear for chilling by the creek. Nice cast. Fitness apparel to push for higher reps. You got this. And golf balls priced so you can afford to lose one. Or a few. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athlete-ish, Sierra's got it.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
Hey guys, I just wanted to take a quick second to tell you about XOP. You guys, if you haven't gotten your hands on this gear, you are missing out. XOP is constantly innovating to come out with some cutting-edge, lightweight mobile hunting equipment that's top-notch and won't break the bank. Whether you're an experienced mobile hunter or someone just looking to get into it, XOP has a platform, stand, or set of sticks to get you where you need to be this fall. And best of all, it's all backed by a lifetime metal guarantee. This season, I'll be using the Retrograde platform, X2 sticks, and the Mondo hybrid harness. Go build your kit today at xopoutdoors.com. Hunting season is here, and my most used piece of gear that isn't really gear at all is the OnX Hunt app. You guys, you've heard me talk about this forever, and for a good reason. I rely on OnX to help me break down new pieces, learn about areas, plan safe access, and share spots with buddies and loved ones whenever I hit the field. Right now, my most used feature has been the leaf off imagery layer, which allows me to get a better idea of what's beneath the tree canopy and predict where deer will be moving. On top of that, I'm looking at the crop, acorn producing oaks, and slope angle layers to plan my hunts. Whether you're chasing big bucks or you're trying to find that new honey hole for you and your duck hunting buddies, you need to get the OnX Hunt app this fall. Go check it out at onxmaps.com. Fall is here and it's finally time to hit the woods, and this season I'm stoked to be wearing Huntworth to keep me warm, dry, and concealed when I hit the woods. Right now I'm rocking the Durham lightweight pants, Shelton midweight hoodie, and Bluff Woods neck gaiter. That's going to keep me going until the temps start dropping, at which point I'll be layering under the Elkins midweight bibs, which if you haven't heard, they are an absolutely killer piece of outerwear. Whether it's the Elkins bibs, jacket, or vest, this outer layer is lightweight and completely windproof to keep you comfortable when the wind starts howling on those crisp fall sits. My kit this year is in the Tarnin pattern, but you can also check out all of these items in the new Vertec camo pattern as well. Go get yours today at huntworthgear.com. What is going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Wisconsin Sportsman Podcast. I'm your host, Pierce Nellis, and this is your home for all things hunting, fishing, and conservation in the Badger State. Folks, recording this on September 19th, so we're doing this one in advance. Got to get it to Dan before he heads off to South Dakota on his trip. But, you know, folks, I before we dive in here, I've been chewing on this a little bit and doing a lot of thinking just as we prepare for this fall and just this season in general. Gotten me thinking that it's been just about a year since I came aboard the Wisconsin Sportsman Podcast. And looking back on it, I can't believe that it's already been a year. But it has been a pretty damn fun one. I got to say that. And I just wanted to say to all of you folks listening, folks who have tuned in for all the episodes or maybe just a couple episodes, all the folks that we've gotten to talk to, folks who have reached out to me, folks who I've gotten to cross paths with at different events and stuff like that. Just wanted to say a massive thank you to all of you guys because this thing doesn't happen without you. And got to say, I feel pretty darn lucky to have been able to share this many conversations with so many awesome outdoorsmen and like-minded individuals and really just conservation-minded people, great minds in the outdoor space, really. One of which happens to be with me on the line right now, Mr. Gus Merwin, making his return to the show. Gus, how are we doing tonight, buddy?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I am doing great. Good. Like I said, I don't know. I'm not going to repeat myself here in the intro too much. That's my year two resolution is to tighten up the intros a little bit because I tell you what, buddy, I tend to ramble. But man, I'm happy to have you back on here. We're going to be talking some duck season prep, some duck trip prep, really for planning to travel for hunts. You've got a big trip coming up in a couple weeks here. I guess by the time this comes out, you'll probably be on that trip. But dude, before we dive into that. For folks who didn't listen to our episode that we did a couple months ago we did kind of a dissection of hunting culture, outdoor media, outdoor marketing messages and stuff like that, a conversation that I thoroughly enjoyed. And folks, if you didn't listen to that one, I would highly encourage you to go back and listen to that one because not to sound biased here, but I thought it was a good conversation. Good food for thought as all of us have our social media feeds and our email inboxes bombarded with excellent marketing fodder, as you put it in that conversation, I believe. But yeah, for folks who didn't listen to that one, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, and what you like to do in the outdoor world?
Yeah, man. Grew up in a small town just north of Madison. Grew up having kind of not an absolutely dedicated relationship to hunting, developed a love and appreciation for hunting as I got older. And now it's, you know, what I love to do, deer season, duck season, turkey season. Just, you know, being outside, being in the woods, being in the blind is sort of the passion these days. Kind of like we talked about in the last discussion, the last 7-8 years of my career have been in marketing, copywriting in some way, shape, or form, and doing that now. So that's kind of where I'm at.
Absolutely, dude. Well, I just got to say it again, because I was thinking about this while I was driving up here today. Folks, if this sounds weird, it's because I'm not in the regular studio. I'm actually taking over my folks' office right now, as we're doing a little dog sitting for the next couple of days. But I was thinking about it, just getting ready for this conversation here. Like, it's weird to think that it was already almost 4 years ago that you and I crossed paths working for Orvis as a couple of retail associates. And I don't know. I'll tell you what, buddy, I'm glad that our paths crossed. I will say that because we've shared many a good conversation about a lot of different aspects of the outdoors and stuff. And I'm excited to be having another one with you here tonight. But man,
I kind of teased it there for a sec, but what are your, so you've got a big duck trip coming up, and that's what we're going to be helping. Cause yeah, I know you're not the only one listening to this. Wisconsin has is a state full of diehard waterfowlers. And, as some folks know, in our state, it can be really, really good. It can also be a little slow at times and a little tough. And as fun and as unique as Wisconsin is, for just about every game or type of game that you're chasing, there are, of course, other states that might be a little bit better, a little more waterfowl heavy, a little more target rich environments, if you will. One of those states being North Dakota.
Yep.
Can you tell us a little bit about your trip plans for that?
Yeah. So I'll be going out to North Dakota. As of this recording, I will be leaving next Friday to go out for the non-resident opener for North Dakota. This will be my fourth trip out there, I believe. Going with a couple of buddies that have also been there. One of my friends has been going out there for the better part of 10 years, multiple times. So, yeah, it's, me, my dad, and then two friends driving out there, and we'll be, I won't spot burn myself, but we'll be hunting in the very greater, Devil's Lake area. Yeah, we'll be out there for ducks and geese, and kind of, we got into snow geese, a couple years ago when we went out there. So it's kind of you get a fun mixed bag out there of birds that you don't necessarily see as often in Wisconsin.
Right. So I guess let's start with this here. So North Dakota, a lot of folks know that as this, I mean, for whatever you're chasing, North Dakota is a pretty awesome state to go and do some hunting in, or fishing.
It says it on every sportsman's
exactly. But I guess I'm not as familiar about this. So what I guess is it about North Dakota that draws so many hunters there, aside from being a sportsman's paradise, like you just said? Like, is it, I guess, what is it that makes it such a target rich environment for waterfowlers and pheasant hunters and all that? We'll focus on ducks and geese for right now, but what is it that sets it apart from a state like Wisconsin?
Well, it's the topography and the geography of it is really kind of the main thing. So North Dakota and South Dakota, and then stretching up into Canada, I know you've heard it, and I'm sure other people listening have heard it too. It's the kind of the heart of the Prairie Pothole region. Mm-hmm. So it's just full of little ponds and lakes and sloughs and stuff like that. And I looked it up earlier just to kind of refamiliarize myself with some of the numbers, but the Prairie Pothole region makes up 50% of the duck population in North America. It's home to 50% of the duck population in North America, waterfowl population.
No kidding.
Yeah. So it is all those potholes are remnants from the glaciers that made up the area. And then when they melted off, it left a whole ton of water on top of a bunch of ag that's out there right now. Ton of farms, big soybean country, corn. So it's just, it's got a lot of things going for it in regards to nesting habitat, breeding habitat, food. So it's a duck's paradise. And then by virtue of a duck hunter's paradise.
Absolutely. I didn't realize that was all glacier driven out there. I guess it makes sense. I spent so much time and so much time talking about so much time talking about the Driftless region in our corner of the state there that, you know, I seldom think to look beyond it. I often look east of it in the Kettle Moraine area there, but that makes perfect sense. I didn't really, I just never put those two together there.
Yeah.
That makes perfect sense. So I guess on that note there, as you were saying that, thinking in terms of topography that's been influenced by a glacier and stuff, I know that the Driftless region isn't exactly like excellent duck hunting region. However, it gets a little bit better the further east you go in our state. Is that, I would assume, I mean, we've got Horicon Marsh and stuff like that, which did get hit with a glacier. So I guess that makes perfect sense that the hunting would be a little bit better over there, I suppose.
Yeah, so once you get into western Minnesota, and then leading into North Dakota, it's just, you know, ag fields literally as far as the eye can see. And then it's relatively flat. I haven't gone into far western North Dakota, so I think once you get over there, the topography changes and it gets kind of hillier, kind of like when you get into kind of more western South Dakota.
Sure.
But yeah, the areas that we've hunted, it's flat, it's full of farms, and it's full of these little potholes, and like the potholes are. It's kind of like how Wisconsin can claim they have more lakes than Minnesota because they classify lakes differently than Minnesota does.
Yep.
Out in North Dakota, they have these potholes that are as big as some of the lakes around Wisconsin, and that they're just totally unnamed bodies of water that they're just, oh yeah, that's a slough, or yeah, that's a pothole, or whatever. So it's just kind of like very matter of fact out there, but yeah, it's you know, very interesting country, with very interesting bird hunting.
Absolutely. So I guess my goal with our conversation here, like we kind of talked about off air, I think would be to, for folks who are planning a trip out west, maybe give them some additional information on things to look for, things that they can learn about as they venture west, but also take some principles and things that you pick up and learn out there and see how we can apply them back here in our great Badger state here, and vice versa. If there's stuff that I say this all the time, like at least, I don't know, once a season, at least that I'm good for one duck hunt a year. Usually I'm very, very green to it. I'm no expert by any means, but that's why I have seasoned duck hunters like you guys, come onto the show here. But so I guess I want to start with this. In an area like North Dakota, or this pothole region, where, as I understand it, North Dakota, as long as it's not marked no trespassing or not marked that, you know, no hunters allowed or no whatever, you're allowed to kind of just go wherever. Is that right?
Ish. Yeah.
Ish. Okay.
with the growth of like Onyx and other like mapping softwares and apps and stuff, it's changed a little bit. So, if a field is not physically marked, if you're, you know, standing right next to it, like a farmer has to have a posted sign every 75 to 100 yards, something like that, in order to like be officially posted, just to make it like very plain to people that like no hunting. Mm-hmm. That obviously means no hunting, but they can also, now that mapping apps are so popular, they don't have to physically have it posted anymore, which means you then have to like check Onyx or something similar to see that it's definitely not posted. Because we've seen properties before where they haven't had physical signs up, but when we open up Onyx, it'll say posted, and vice versa. So it you really kind of like the days of, oh, there's no signs here, we can walk out, or there's no signs here, we can go knock on that farmer's door and see if he'll let us go out. It's still definitely possible, but it's gotten a little trickier. You got to do your due diligence to make sure, like, you know, what you think is huntable is actually definitely huntable. But I mean, that, like, we're all on Onyx or Spartan Forge or whatever. So, you know, it's just kind of like comes with the territory now, whatever you're hunting, you're doing. So it's just kind of another layer added to going out there and trying to find birds.
Got it. I didn't realize that it was actually posted, or that it would have a different, you know, layer or, you know, color shading or something like that on Onyx for you already. That's super interesting. But I guess in a state like North Dakota that does get that much traffic, and I guess that does have those land access laws that kind of make sense that they would be able to devise those. And I guess in a state like North Dakota too, where it's primarily a lot of ag land, and I'm assuming a lot of these folks have, it's a lot of fairly large, substantial tracts of land and not a bunch of, you know, 40s and 25s and 15s and stuff like that, like we see here in Wisconsin. It's probably a little easier to actually go about implementing those boundaries and updating that information and stuff on those mapping apps. That's really interesting. I didn't realize that it had reached that point yet. But
yeah, that I think that just went into law just like 2 years ago or so. That where they do have that virtual posting for landowners. But yeah, I mean they make it very blatant when you're looking at Onyx that it's posted. It's like a big, thick, red lined piece of property with like lines running through it that says like virtually posted or something like that.
Huh. That's cool. That's super cool. Huh. So I guess let me ask you this. So say you found your parcel. It is not virtually posted or physically posted. You know you can get to it or you can access it and stuff. In an area like North Dakota, where there's potholes and sloughs and, you know, seemingly endless bodies of water in varying sizes and stuff, how the heck do you pick one? Like, what are you looking for when you're e-scouting prior to your trip? And then once you get there and you're actually, you know, in the truck covering ground and checking things out, what are the two things that, or I guess, what are the main things that you're looking for in those two scenarios?
So the first few times I went out to North Dakota, water was kind of the name of the game. We really didn't have much of a setup in regard to like field decoys and layout blinds and stuff like that. So we were always trying to find just public potholes or unposted potholes in order to get out and hunt them. In the past few years, we've kind of broadened our arsenal of blinds and decoys and stuff like that. So we're kind of ready for whatever we encounter in regards to like, oh, the ducks want to be in that pothole, or the ducks want to be like, oh, that bean field was just picked, so they want to be in there real bad. Mm-hmm. We usually spend, if we hunt in the morning, we'll head back to wherever we're staying and grab some lunch. And then the afternoon is pretty much dedicated to a nap, and then B, going out to look for birds. So we look for fields that have just been combined, or if it's kind of a wetter year, maybe a slough in a field that's just been harvested. It's a little bit drier of a year. Sometimes it's easier to find birds because they're maybe more concentrated in like one body of water that's still holding water. So it really kind of depends on these days. In the last few years that we've gone, e-scouting hasn't been as big an aspect of our day-to-day out there. It's been more so like, okay, just figure out where they are, because we're here. Let's just go see if, you know, we can get on that field, or if it's a field that we already have permission on or something like that.
Gotcha. So is it, I guess I'm curious about this, because it sounds like there's a lot of real-time in-person scouting. You know, you use Onyx a little bit to check the boundaries, or maybe like see if there's like more open ground prior to getting there and stuff. How many miles are you generally like in a day, say you're like, or I guess in an afternoon, are you in general, like just ballpark, having to put on the truck to find these geese for tomorrow or these ducks for tomorrow? I suppose it probably depends.
Yeah. These days it's actually not that many. So the first year I went out there, we hunted in an area that was west of where we go now. And I remember my buddy and I were in the truck one day, and we covered probably, I don't know, 150 miles, just scouting one afternoon. Like we drove like through Minot, like almost to the Canadian border, like looking for birds. we were like super aimless. It hadn't been a good trip thus far in as far as like bird numbers go. But now, where we stay, the people we stay with, they are local farmers out there. And when we stay with them, we have access to their fields.
Nice.
We have access to their fields, and we've gotten to be friendly with another farmer friend of theirs, and we have access to his fields. So we have kind of through just developing these relationships gotten access to quite a lot of acreage that we can hunt. And it's a mix of ag and ag with like some sloughs and potholes and stuff on it. Scouting looks a lot different now than it did the first few times I went out there, and the first maybe like six times my other buddy went out there. Cause now it's sort of, we start locally on the stuff that we know we can hunt already. Cause it's, we know there's birds around and we know it's good property to hunt. And then if for whatever reason we don't see birds on a feed, or we don't see birds dumping into one of the sloughs or potholes, then we kind of expand out. But we really, the last two times we've gone out there, we haven't had to go much further than, I don't know, 20 miles away from where we were staying. It's been easier on gas for sure. And it's been just kind of easier on the body, easier on the scouting and stuff like that.
Sure. Well, I would imagine too, and I could be wrong here, I might just be assuming here, but I would imagine in a place like that, even if they're not necessarily on your spot, it's might just be okay or good hunting, not great hunting. Like it could be a little ways away. Am I accurate there? Like, is it easy? I guess, let me put it this way. Is it easy to get skunked in North Dakota?
It's definitely happened.
Okay.
It's not. The first year I went out there, I just assumed we were going to kind of walk out to where we were going to go. And we were going to shoot limits every single day. I think in the three times I've been out there previously, I think I've shot a limit once.
Okay.
Maybe
gotcha.
Twice. You see a ton of birds. Like every time we've gone out, we've always seen birds. But oftentimes it's hard to pull birds, in my experience, just because they're moving around in a lot higher numbers together. So if you have, you know, a couple hundred mallards or geese or something like in a field that's half a mile away, it's going to be tough. No matter how good you're
pulling them out of there.
Pulling those birds out of there, or pulling passing birds away from those live birds into yours. Mm-hmm. We've done it before. I'm sure there's people listening that have decoyed birds like away from bigger groups, like way easier than we have. But yeah, in my experience, there are definitely some lean days, and it's also depends on when you're out there. So we go out there for the non-resident opener just because that's the week that has worked out for our group schedule, which is also the Wisconsin opener. So I know some people were like, why would you bail on Wisconsin's opening weekend to go elsewhere? It's like, well, just refer back to when I said that the Prairie Pothole region holds 50% of North America's birds. Like,
right.
on a bad day, you'll see way more birds out there than you will here on a good day on that weekend.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So plus like out there, it might be 15, 20 degrees colder than it will be here.
Mm-hmm.
Which will also, you know, make a difference as far as the flight and everything. So, I feel like I've rambled on. I've kind of lost track of your question now, but
no, dude, I'm learning a lot here. That's the thing. And yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Cause that's one thing that, on my whole two duck hunts that I've learned is that you want a couple of, you know, a group of like two or three or that lone mallard flying overhead. You don't want a big flock of 25, you know, birds overhead. Cause that's, well, 50 eyes looking down at your spread and looking at you and scoping everything out. And if one of them doesn't like it, the others probably don't either. And so, you know, that totally makes sense that, I mean, getting around those big birds or big flocks. I mean, it's one thing, cause like I said, like you see a flock of 10 around here and you get fired up and your palms start sweating. I can't imagine seeing a flock of a couple hundred, up there. That's a completely different game. I guess that kind of,
there's something going out there and watching, you know, 500 snow geese get up off of a lake or something like that.
There's jeez,
5,000 snow geese get off a lake. It's just like the sheer number of birds that you see out there when they're all flocked up is it's pretty wild. You'll just, it's the kind of thing that you just pull over on the side of the road and just watch until they like hit the horizon. It's pretty incredible.
Huh. I was gonna say, I imagine that. I don't know, probably the first time you see that many birds in one place or all of them get up at once, you're like, holy shit, I've never even seen that many birds all together. Like, I mean, combined throughout a season or, you know, all at once, whatever. Like, it's probably got to be like almost a little bit like, am I actually seeing this right now? Like, am I actually, like, are there actually that many birds? Like the sheer volume of that. Cause it just, even as you said it, I'm sitting here trying to picture like, that's an insane number of birds. It seems like it would like block out the sun, like that many birds.
It's definitely the kind of thing where until you see it, it's really tough to kind of like picture in your mind's eye what it looks like. But I remember the first year I went out there, my buddy and I were out scouting around and we just saw like this cloud somewhere. And so we like, we followed it for like 2 miles until we got up to where it was. And it was just this snow goose feed. And there was, I don't know, 3,000 snow geese in there. And it was us and probably like 10 other trucks just pulled over on the side of the road, just watching all these snow geese. And they like, when they're on a feed, they'll kind of, they'll bunch up and then like 100 of them at a time will just kind of like leapfrog one another just over and over again. And you just see a big plume of them jump up and then drop right back down on the feed. And then like same thing goes again. And it's just like, it's wild. And like that field in particular, there was an outfitter that had it posted like probably every 50 yards, just to make it very, very plain. You cannot hunt this.
I see why. So when they do that, when they are leapfrogging each other, is it just they're all landing and there's so many geese that they're eating up the food that quickly and then they have to go to the next spot and get more food like every 100 yards or so?
Yeah, they'll clean up a field pretty quickly. But yeah, it's I think with as many of them that are around, I think they kind of like jostle one another too. So then like once a few jump up, like everybody just kind of follows suit and then they'll just like kind of go wherever the group goes. So it seems like kind of hive mind in that respect. I'm sure there's a bird biologist listening that can maybe course correct me there, but, but yeah, I've only been, aside from that, when we watched those snow geese, bounce around a feed. I've only been on one really awesome snow goose hunt. And we shot 11 birds and there were 4 of us. So it's like not even close to a limit, but it was totally unexpected. We weren't prepared for it at all. We might've had like 20 snow goose decoys out. So, which is not a big spread for out there. In addition to like the Canadas and the duck decoys we had out and stuff. So it was just kind of like, we weren't even in the field they necessarily wanted to be in. We were just kind of in between where they were and where they wanted to go. And we were able to peel off a few at a time and just kind of like pick away at them. But it was a super awesome experience.
Dang, man. Once again, that's like tough to even just comprehend, but that also gets me thinking here. So one of the things you just mentioned, just in terms of the decoys and having 20 of them out there, when it comes to gear, I guess let's start with decoys. How gear intensive is an out-of-state trip like this? Is it you know, bring everything you got? Is it like, I guess, how do you go about in an area that has 50% of the waterfowl migration? How do you go about choosing what to bring? Or do you just not choose? You just do it all?
Yeah, it's kind of a bring everything you got in regards to be ready for anything.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going, it's me and three other guys, like I said earlier. So between us, like, we have, you know, everything we would need, as far as, you know, decoys and blinds and shells. And, my one buddy has a nice big trailer that we use. So like, we have everything that we would need. It's just sort of a matter of knowing the time that you're going out there, what's typically going to be out there. So if we're going out there for the non-resident opener, it's going to be the, you know, end of September, beginning of October. There's not typically a lot of snows out there that time of year, but I think we'll probably end up taking some snow decoys, like, just in case, because we typically at least see some when we've been out there that weekend. So it's, and like I kind of mentioned earlier, like, maybe we're hunting potholes, so you have to have some floater decoys. When we go out there, the fun thing about being out there is hunting fields, because they're just, like, so huge. So you want to have, like, your good field spread and everything. So it's just, if you go with a group of people, which, to my knowledge, like, the people that I know that go out there always go with a group, pretty decent group, and you can kind of amass everything that you need, you know, a couple hundred decoys between your group. You don't have to take everything, but kind of like take your, I don't know, A+ stuff out there and just kind of be ready for whatever you see while you're out scouting.
Right. Your confidence rigs.
Yeah, for sure.
So that sounds like this would be I mean, you kind of alluded to it there, that it's having a group is critical, or maybe not critical, but it sounds like it would definitely make things a heck of a lot easier. This sounds like a pretty big task to take on as a solo hunter, I would imagine. Do you guys see very many solo guys up there, or is it a lot of groups of folks?
I've only seen groups of people out there. I mean, I'm sure some local guys have, like, their pothole that they'll go out and sit with their dog and just kind of work on it for a morning or whatever.
Right.
Everybody I know that goes out there or lives out there and hunts it, always hunts with, you know, 4, 5, 6 people. Because, like, the amount of decoys that you're putting out would be insane for one person to put out. getting the blind set up, you know, even like with the limits that are out there, which, like, they're not like crazy high limits or anything, based on like the amount of birds that are out there, but I don't know that the ROI would be there for one guy putting out 100 goose decoys in a field or something and then shooting his limited and then, like, packing it all down. Unless you're, like, wild dedicated to the craft and art of goose hunting. I don't know that you'd want to do it that way, but yeah, groups are the way to go. And then, like, if you're doing it from out of state, like us, the cost share is one of the biggest things, you know, splitting gas to get out there, splitting groceries, splitting lodging, stuff like that. So there's definitely affordable ways to do it. And I think the way that we do it is a pretty, like, smart way to do it money wise. Plus it's just fun. It's just more fun to do with a group of guys and go out there and, you know, do your morning hunt, come back, grab some lunch, everybody fall asleep, and then wake up and crack a beer and get ready to do it all over again next day.
Absolutely, man. Yeah, that does sound a heck of a lot more fun than roughing it solo. I hadn't thought about the 100 decoys for one guy to worry about. Yeah, that's definitely a bit of a tall order there. But that's, you know, I feel like that's, again, part of what makes duck hunting so much fun and so cool is that communal aspect and the fact that it is one of those pursuits that you can do as a team. You can all be cracking jokes and razzing each other all morning long while you're watching birds fly overhead and everything. You're not, you know, all headed to separate tree stands or turkey blinds or whatever it may be. Like there's definitely that communal aspect that's, or I guess the social aspect is just as much a part of it as the actual hunting aspect. That's super cool.
Yeah. Like, I mean,
in
like,
terms of, sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, like we touched on, you know, in our last episode that we did, you know, that's kind of what got me into it, is being able to just like sit there and shoot the shit with my friends, kind of in between volleys and misses. Unlike deer hunting where it's like, okay, let's all meet up in the morning, get out there at the same time, and then go to our individual trees and okay, I'll see you in 10 hours.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah, no, I think, come to think of it, I think some of my best deer hunting talks and stories have been actually wild duck hunting, because I can't tell anyone while I'm deer hunting. That's funny. So in addition to decoys, then, you kind of alluded to it, you've got a boatload of decoys. If you got a buddy with a trailer who can move the darn things for you, obviously guns, gun care, backup gun, I would imagine. What's the, aside from decoys, what's the gear list look like for you on a trip like this?
You'll definitely want a blind of some sort, whether it's we've been doing an A-frame blind the last few years, but I like guys still do layout blinds. Layout blinds are still quite popular, so you know, whatever your group does specifically, and definitely take that. Backup gun for sure. The first year I went out there, I was having gun problems with a brand new gun. So then I ended up using my pump shotgun that had been using the years prior. So, you know, goofy things happen with guns, so you definitely want, a backup. Shells, we usually, you know, you're not sure what you're going to get into as far as bird numbers and how great the hunts are going to be and stuff. So we usually try to take like a case of shells per guy. And you know, we're still like working through like past cases of shells. So we have this kind of like a grab bag of a case that we just kind of cobble together, and it worked just fine. Licenses, licenses are important to take. Something to grab ahead of time. Even if ahead of time means during the 10, 11, 12 hour drive out there, making sure that you have everything legal. Cause, North Dakota has you select a week long period that you're going to be hunting when you're out there. I don't know if I'm resident, probably doesn't have to, but if you're non-resident, it always has you select, a 7-day period that you're going to be out there.
Gotcha.
So you definitely want to have your dates dialed in so that you can do that correctly. And then make sure you have your federal duck stamp. Groceries from there, especially if you plan to go out there and just like eat what you shoot, and you have pretty lean hunts and you don't really shoot anything, you want to be able to fall back on some egg sandwiches and frozen pizzas and stuff like that. So,
totally.
Yeah. It's just, you know, whatever gets you out in the field comfortably, and then whatever keeps you comfortable back at your lodging is I think the biggest things.
For sure. What's the one thing that somebody always forgets?
Probably licenses, honestly. I
the only one that can get you in legal trouble. Dang
yeah,
it.
Yeah, for sure. I would say licenses are, I don't think I've ever been in a group where anybody's ever been like, nobody's ever been like in legal gray area by any means, but it's been like, I forgot to get my duck stamp, so they're buying it like in the truck on the way out to North Dakota or something like that. Or, but that, or, a backup gun. So I've been out there when people just brought one gun and they're just like, oh, well, the thing's giving me issues. So, and I don't have anything else. So they either got to use another guy's backup gun, or they just kind of like grin and bear it with the one that they have.
Right. Gotcha. So all in all, gear wise, it doesn't sound too much more intensive than anything hunting back home. I mean, the one thing that we didn't really talk about there was a boat or a kayak or a canoe or anything like that. I would imagine from the sound of it, if you're doing as much field hunting as you are, or more field hunting than you are, you know, slough hunting or, you know, actually on water and stuff, it's not like you gotta necessarily, I mean, maybe you do, I don't really know, but it's not like you gotta rip up and down the big river or anything like that to get into your spots or anything. So I would imagine that at least being able to either drive the truck out and pop the decoys and the blind and everything out, that's got to be a little bit nicer than having to worry about getting a boat around and all the hassle that comes with that.
Yeah.
So when it comes to...
I've never been out there with a boat. The last year I went out there, we did take a kayak just because we weren't totally sure what we were going to get into. But my one buddy has his dog that he brings, and then I'm bringing my dog this year, which no clue how that's going to go, but we'll see. So yeah, and like the water that we hunt is, you know, we try to keep it like waist to chest deep, so nothing like crazy that you need like elaborate setups to hunt or anything like that. So
right.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Well, with the, I don't know, the demeanor I've seen in some of those Snapchats of your dog, I think she's up for the challenge, if I had to guess.
We'll see.
At the very least, she'll be a good blind companion.
Yeah. If she can be steady in the blind and can be a nice, polite the girl around camp, then it'll be I think a success in my book. And if she happens to pick up a duck, I will be absolutely tickled to death. I might just call it a trip and not hunt anymore.
Well, man, I hope that both of you have that success there. I've got a good feeling about her. So man, bringing it back home then, after you go on a trip like this, where you see this many ducks and then you get home and you've still got, 6 weeks, 8 weeks of duck season, not counting goose season or anything like that back here at home, man, how do you, I guess I'll start here. How do you like adjust back to reality coming back off of a trip like that? Like, does it make it a little bit tougher to get back out in the water or in the fields or anything here in Wisconsin? Or I guess just that adjustment has to be like heartbreaking, it sounds.
It can be a little goofy, especially the last 2 years here in Wisconsin haven't been, I guess if you count success as far as like bird numbers, they haven't been like successful for me. I know other guys that have had awesome seasons, but me and my friends, that's been pretty lean. But I think you really have to kind of compartmentalize the fact that like out there is just a totally different animal. Like they have, like, that's where the ducks are breeding. That's where the ducks are living. That's where they're flying over. You know, we had the Mississippi Flyway is definitely a lot of fun. But it's completely different. And you know, if you subscribe to the idea that like flyways are sort of shifting, and then you can kind of like maybe explain away some of the like lackluster days that you have out in the blind back home. But there's definitely birds around for the folks that want to go find them. I know myself, I have a hard time getting out and being able to like scout around and actually find birds. So we kind of just like fall back on some of the trusty old spots that we know that we can hunt or know that we have permission on or know that we can get a boat to, kind of thing. So
sure.
I think it's just about dialing it back and knowing that like you're out there to have fun, and you're out there to, you know, see awesome sunrises that you're not going to get from bed, sort of thing. So if you can, you know, compartmentalize that North Dakota is different, and then just keep in mind like the real reason that you're out there, and then adjusting's not too bad. Although
right,
shooting limit in Wisconsin would be nice.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. It's like, you take your trip to Disney World for the week and then you come home and maybe you make it to the Wisconsin Dells for a day or something like that, yeah. You know, have your fun that way. But so I guess when it comes to tactics and stuff from out west to the Midwest, and vice versa, what are some of the things that translate, and what were some of the things that after going out to North Dakota, you're like, shoot, I'm going to bring that back home and do things this way?
I think one of the biggest things that I've noticed out there is that like the sock style decoys, the ones that are kind of like open-ended, like a wind sock, and they like catch the wind and they like blow around in the field. They look awesome out in North Dakota with those big flat ag fields that get a lot of wind. You know, you get a lot of motion in your decoy spreads and it looks really good. Those, in my experience, do not translate well back to Wisconsin. And I think it's due in large part to sort of what we touched on earlier, where the property sizes are just smaller. You know, you're hunting a 40 acre parcel or something like that, that's broken up by a bunch of hedgerows or something like that. So it doesn't get the same wind as a big 500 acre open field in North Dakota.
Right.
And that was something I had to learn because I thought, you know, wind socks would just kind of work awesome here in Wisconsin, and it definitely hasn't been the case. I don't think I've even hunted over them in Wisconsin. I think calling is something that a lot of people have to adjust to, because they get super revved up when they see birds. I know I've done it, and they just immediately want to like grab their call and start tooting it. And you sort of have to read the birds. If they're talking a lot or if they're responding to calls, then awesome. But be prepared to, you know, dial back how much you're calling in order to, try to court them. Because like out there, you'll see a ton of them and maybe you need to call a ton in order to hopefully draw them away from the adjacent field where there's, you know, 100 birds over there. Whereas over back in Wisconsin, that's not always the case. Like there's not going to be necessarily that many birds in a single field that you have to draw from. So sometimes taking a sort of quieter approach to your calling is better, and just kind of give them a few sequences and then just let them do what they do. And if they come to you, awesome. It worked. If not, then, you know, adjust from there.
Totally. No, that makes sense. And I would imagine too, just given the hunting pressure in comparison to the number of ducks and geese that are passing through our area, they're probably getting honked at quite a bit, and they've probably been peppered or what's the term for it? Sky busted.
Yeah.
You know what they call it? Sky busting? Yeah. Like they've probably had their fair share of shot sent their way and gotten out of there unscathed. So I'd imagine they get pretty wary around there. Are there anything from, or any tactics from like Wisconsin that you guys take out there and you're like, we're kind of the only ones doing this? Or like, is there sort of a, I don't know, for some reason I'm like, I want to say there's like a scrappiness to our Wisconsin duck hunting when we go out there or out west or something like that, because we're used to not seeing that many deer that like, or not deer, geez, ducks. That when you get out there, like, is there any sort of edge that we have as Midwestern hunters once we get out there?
I think, I guess in my experience, like the idea of being prepared to drive quite a bit to go find birds. Cause like here, you might have to, you know, put on some miles to go find birds on, you know, this farmer's pond kind of thing. Whereas out there, you don't have to drive as far, I don't think, from what I've experienced, but you're prepared to drive that far. and just like the effort you're willing to put in regards to like waking up at 2 a.m. and driving, you know, depending on where you're staying versus where your birds are, you know, an hour to the field that you have permission on or something like that. So, I don't know that there's an edge necessarily other than the ability to maybe drink all night and wake up the next morning. Lots of hunters have over other hunters. I think just like being here and knowing that you're going to have to put in some hustle to find birds and then going out there and being ready to do that same hustle, but then not having to do so, is kind of what I've experienced, with Wisconsin hunters going out to North Dakota.
Gotcha. You've got grit. That's what you're saying. Sure. I like it.
Absolutely.
Grit. Absolutely. No. Yeah. Sometimes, it's tough to tell which one's which, but I like it, man. Well, dude, what have we not touched on for folks who are planning a duck trip or who are, I don't know, just getting ready for duck season in general? Like, you've already been out hunting for a couple weeks here. Like, do you feel like the rust has been knocked off prior to your out-of-state trip? And like, do you feel like you're going to come back and just be in go mode at that point?
Yeah, I definitely hope so. It's fun. So starting off the duck season out there and hypothetically seeing and shooting more birds is definitely an awesome way to kick off the season. Even though if you go out later in the year when it's colder and the migration has started and more birds have come down from Canada, you could hypothetically again have a better hunt. So that's definitely, a fun way to kick off the season. But I think, one of the things that we maybe haven't touched on, as much as we've kind of talked about it a little bit, but like the idea of like going and knocking on a farmer's door, I've seen it work, to varying degrees of success. The situation that my friends and I are in, is kind of due in large part to like, we happened to book an Airbnb owned by a farmer's family that owned a bunch of land. And they, part of the deal of people booking that Airbnb is like, they get access to their fields when they stay at their place.
Got it.
And then we rolled that into meeting one of their other friends who also lets us hunt his property. So, I know one of the things I hear, not just like from Wisconsin people, but kind of like from, you know, podcasts from wherever about hunting is like, oh yeah, you go out to the plains area like that and just go knock on a farmer's field and they'll go let you hunt. And it's like, that's not strictly true. And then now with like the, like we talked about earlier, the virtual posting and stuff like that, where they don't have to necessarily, they might not even live there. They might be an out of state owner that just like owns that property and they have somebody local farm it. So it's, you have to do your due diligence there for sure. And just kind of like, once you get those relationships, really continue to cultivate them. Cause everybody we've met out there has been a really great person. And so we send them a Christmas card every year and, you know, text them during the summer and ask like how the farming season's going and stuff like that. So, you know, once you get your foot in the door, really showing, those people that, you know, you're not just like a come out for a week, once a year kind of guy, and like you, mm-hmm. you do care about them and you do appreciate, you know, what they have to offer. And, you know, the great thing about Wisconsin people is like, we have a bunch of cheese. So we always take cheese out there and hand it out to, you know, the folks that we stay with and the folks that we meet and stuff like that. So, I think that's one of the other big things about hunting out there is in my experience, is just like, once you stumble into a relationship really kind of make it worth their while, which then kind of makes it worth your while.
Right. Absolutely. Take care of the people that take care of you. And
sure.
What better way to do that than, dude, a cheese basket goes a hell of a long way. I'll tell you that. I don't know if it's just because it's like we're from the Midwest, but like there's like the novelty of when you tell somebody that you're from Wisconsin or that you're out there, like, oh, okay, well, cheese and cows, cool. Yeah. Like that's a great tip there. I think for anyone really, like even if you're hunting in state and you're knocking on a farmer's door or something like that stuff, like there's enough small family owned cheese shops around that. I mean, son of a gun, grab them a block of something nice and bring it with next time you go hunting. But yeah. Man, that's such a good point too for those out of state connections as well, just to maintain those relationships. And I mean, like we said, you know, both in state and out of state, it's an important part of hunting. And you know, I mean, being a good person, but also, you know, representing the sport and the pursuit well, and all that. But so, man, we've got North Dakota on the list. What are your other plans for this upcoming fall?
Yeah, come back. And I got my dad and I kind of stumbled into a duck boat this summer.
That's right.
It's just a boat. It needs a blind. It needs a motor. So this will be my kind of first duck boat build out experience. So I doubt I'll get it on the water this year. It's probably going to be a 2025 endeavor, but just kind of get my one friend that I go with, he's had boats for the entirety of the time that I've been hunting with him. So he's super sharp about it. So kind of picking his brain and trying to get myself prepared to become a boat guy. Yeah, other than that, just try to get out where I can, when I can. It's shaping up to be, I think, a pretty good season's schedule as far as it comes to my schedule, and having the availability to go out. So just, you know, keep an eye on the migration and try to meet birds where they're at.
Absolutely, man. Do you have any, big plans for that boat? Or is there anything that you're like trying to like configure in your mind how you're going to do it in real life to really trick the thing out?
I really want to, I was watching a couple of like boat build YouTube videos, and I do really want to repaint it. And kind of do, I have some graphic design friends that have already kind of like, picked their brain a little bit on like, could you like 3D print me this, this stencil kind of thing. And like maybe making a custom like cattail stencil kind of thing and be able to spray paint that on and really kind of make it my own. But it's, yeah, I mean, I've been on boats, plenty, but I've never owned one. So it's, figuring out, how I'm going to part ways with a couple grand, maybe to get a motor that works for it sort of thing. So,
right.
Yeah. Nothing. It's, I see it very clearly in my mind's eye. It's just sort of like all the hurdles I got to go through to get there. So.
Right. Definitely. What, I guess I've never even thought about this. What makes a good duck boat?
I think knowing the limitations of your boat in regards to where you're typically going to be hunting it is really important. So mm-hmm. If you have just kind of like a little putt and motor and you have grand designs about like going out and hunting like a, I don't know, the Wisconsin River or something like that, just knowing that like it's maybe probably not going to make it out there. And so I think having it, having a real firm grasp of what your boat can and can't do is really important. And then aside from that, having a doesn't have to be a top dollar blind or anything like that, but having a nice blind that blends in well with the typical vegetation and hide that you're going to be around is really important. So if you, I don't know whether it's, you know, a marsh grass setup or, like more of kind of a wooded flooded timber kind of look or something like that, just kind of like, you know, knowing where you're typically going to be and then trying to match that, and then having just kind of the layout within the boat just kind of work for how you're typically going to be hunting it. So if it's just going to be you and your dog and like a 12 pack of decoys or something, that's a lot different from then suddenly inviting, you know, two buddies out and then wanting to have another dozen decoys in there.
Right.
So just kind of like dialing in how you're going to go about actually taking that boat out with the people that you may be taking out, I think is really important, instead of just like getting to the landing day of and you just have bags of decoys just stacked and guns stacked and a dog kind of jockeying for position sort of thing. So mm-hmm. From my very newly very little boat experience that I have, that's probably the important things when it comes to a boat.
Got it. That makes sense, man. I always forget how much room decoys take up until, yeah, because I've only got a half dozen. So like right now it's just like hanging on a coat hook.
Sure.
All six of them in my gear room and everything. But then I show up to my buddy's place and he's got the one that, I mean, the things I could practically fit inside the bag, you know, with my gun and my decoys. And it's like, holy smokes. Like, I forget how much room these dang decoys take up. But man, well, I'm excited to see how the boat turns out. And I'm excited to see some pictures and whatnot from North Dakota and this upcoming season as well for you. But man, this has been a blast. It's always great chatting with you. Really, I always appreciate my guest time, but when you get to talk with a buddy and you get to, you know, I don't know, just enjoy good company at the same time, it just makes it a little bit better. So dude, I sincerely appreciate you coming back on the show. And man, just good luck this season, man. We'll be in touch.
Absolutely, bud. You'll probably be getting every picture I take, so.
Deal.
That's all for this week's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you liked this episode, please be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're at it, if you could leave me a 5-star review, I would appreciate that a ton. You can also follow along with my outdoor adventures on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube at the Wisconsin Sportsman Pod. That's also the best way to get a hold of me to suggest topics, guests, or questions you'd like me to explore in this show. Big thanks to our awesome partners, XOP, Onyx, and Huntworth. Please go support the brands that support this show, and if you're looking for more awesome outdoor content, go check out thesportsmansempire.com, where you'll find a ton of other outdoor podcasts. And until next time, make sure you make the time to get outside and enjoy the incredible natural resources that are ours as Wisconsin sportsmen.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.